Welcome to the Interior Health Nursing Grand Rounds, a podcast conversation. I am your host, Allison Thomas, and on this podcast, we talk all things nursing and healthcare. I work as the clinical nurse specialist in the Trauma Services Network in Interior Health. Interior Health would like to recognize and acknowledge the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Dakal Dene, Tanaha, Inglekatma, Shawepam, Shtatlium, Sioux, and Chicoltean nations, where we live, learn, collaborate, and work together. I'm so happy today to introduce you to my colleague, Sheena. And Sheena, maybe could you go ahead and introduce yourself? Tell us who you are.
Sure. Thanks for having me. And my name is Sheena Velasco. I'm a neonatal clinical nurse specialist with the Maternal, Newborn, and Child and Youth Network. It's a new role within IH and a new role to myself, and I've been in it for, it'll be 2 years this September. I'm really enjoying it. My role often overlaps with our perinatal network educator and our pediatric clinical nurse specialist, but the population I serve is for neonates, usually at risk or unwell neonates, between which are babies between 0 to 28 days, as well as babies older than that, which are in the NICU. For example, a premature baby that was born quite early, and so they're older than 28 days of life. And of course, their families, their caregivers, and the healthcare providers that care for them within our health authority.
It's a big job, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a big job. And we have 14 birthing sites, which we which we support. And then non-birthing sites, we know deliveries can happen anywhere. So we also support them from time to time as well. So it's a large health authority we have, large geography, weather challenges when it comes to transport, especially of these babies. So yeah, it's a big job for sure. I have no lack of work.
That's job security, I think. Sheena, have you always worked in the NICU, or what has kind of been your career path to get you here?
Yeah, I won't bore you with like all the long list of things. I've dabbled in a few different things, but definitely my foundation has been NICU for the last 16 to 17 years. When I graduated, I did a bit of peds and went directly into NICU. Okay, so that's been the crux of all the work that I've been doing as a nurse. I did go into public health for a little bit, still worked casual in NICU and public health maternity care. So I think that's really helped me support the continuity of care in the work that I do from acute care to the community. So I'm really thankful that I had that experience as well. And then I've done some leadership work, education, faculty work in different institutions, a lot of mentoring. And then I have, of course, I got my master's because you need that to be a CNS. And I'm also an IBCLC, so an internationally board certified lactation consultant as well. So, and then recently becoming an ACORN instructor and NRP instructor too. So I kind of wear many hats, I guess I'm trying to say.
That's great. Sounds like we're in expert hands with you, which is excellent because I don't know anything about neonates. So it's going to be a good conversation for me to learn. So a neonate is the baby 0 to 28 days. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the definition, a newborn 0 to 28 days.
Okay. And then where would nurses see neonates?
So anywhere that the baby 0 to 28 days would interact with the healthcare system. So that is NICU, postpartum, labor delivery, can come into ED, public health, primary care, pediatrics, just to name a few.
Yeah, so actually a lot of places. Or maybe it's just me, but I kind of think of neonates as a very small part of our population and a very specialty area, which it is, but actually lots of folks, lots of nurses in different care areas will interact with these little guys. So that's really interesting. Now, can you tell me a little bit more about the NICU and what are some of the reasons that neonates might be admitted to the NICU?
Okay. So NICU or neonatal intensive care unit admits newborns. There are rare circumstances where we might admit a baby that has been out in the community and then comes back and just needs that specialty neonatal nursing care and teen care. But most of the babies are born within the hospital and then come to the NICU. They haven't been discharged and come back. The most common reason babies are admitted to the NICU are either respiratory morbidities or prematurity. So there's lots of different reasons, but those are the most common reasons. Mm-hmm. So some of those may be like a respiratory distress syndrome due to a lack of surfactant for premature babies. In regards to prematurity, they need to work on feeding and just developing and growing. So that's a big piece. A lot of our work is building feeding skills in premature babies and supporting breastfeeding and sometimes bottle feeding. Sepsis, jaundice, or hyperbilirubinemia, also known as hypoglycemia. And then there's more rare complications like congenital anomalies, cardiac, neurological concerns, seizures, those kind of things. But those are the most common, I would say, is conditions related to prematurity and respiratory morbidities.
Okay, that's good. That gives me a bit of an idea. So this is kind of, this is a big question. So I don't expect that you're going to be able to, you know, explain all of your expertise and your years of practice. I don't think you can distill it down into one thing. But can you tell me, what are some of the differences, perhaps, between neonates and then, would we say, infants? So babies who are 29 days to a year, is that is that who an infant is?
Yeah, that's a definition of an infant, for sure. I think the biggest piece is, especially in the first 12 to 24 hours in neonatal care, we're really focusing on transition from the fetus to what needs to happen now as a newborn. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's the biggest difference. Of course, there's a lot of growth and changes that happen in an infant from 29 days to a year. And of course, in neonate, even though the definition is 0 to 28 days, at 29 days, it's not like they're suddenly all that different. So it's also a transition, and the growth of a human happens quicker in that first year than any other time in our life. So a lot of changes. I'd say, so in regards to transition, the key areas usually are around cardiorespiratory changes that occur, but really all systems within the newborn or neonate from fetus to newborn are affected with transition. There's neurobehavioral changes. There's tons of synapses and brain development happening more than any other time in our life. That's where developmentally supportive care and responding to infants' pain and family-centered care is really important. There's metabolic changes, given that they're not depending on the placenta anymore for glucose change. There's thermoregulation changes that occur because they're not in that warm, controlled environment in utero, just to name a few. So that's a difference that a neonate will experience, again, especially in the first 12 to 24 hours that an infant has now moved on from.
Yeah, that's really helpful, a helpful way to frame it. I hadn't thought about that before, about it really being a transition period from fetus to infant. That's great. So then how would I approach, if I'm the nurse assessing a neonate, let's all cross our fingers that that's never the case. but if that was me, how would I approach that assessment? And are there some kind of key things that I should be looking for?
Well, there's a lot of nuances in neonatal assessment. I'm sure. So I don't know that I can list them all in our podcast. And of course, it depends on the baby's condition. So there's the normal newborn assessment, which I think is really important to know what a normal newborn assessment is, to have that foundation, just like adults knowing what's normal about an adult before you assess an adult that might be unwell. Same things with babies. So it's really important to have that. We definitely look at how we can do least invasive assessments to most invasive, but that's one of the overarching themes of our assessments. For example, we might do, believe it or not, a blood pressure before a diaper change, because we want to get the diaper change will stimulate maybe a lot of crying. And so we want like a blood pressure at rest. So that might be something that you might not do with an adult, because you can talk to them and say, oh, I'm going to take your blood pressure. Like a baby, you can't prepare them for those kind of things. We still talk to them. We still try and prepare them, but we do try and do that least invasive to most invasive approach. We also try and collect a lot of our assessments from our hands-off assessment before we start actually doing hands-on assessment for babies. So observing their color, observing their state, observing their tone at rest, observing their work of breathing. There's a lot that you can glean from a hands-off assessment and observation. Our head-to-toe assessments, we do try and do a lot of care as best we can as a two-person assessment. either with the parent and the healthcare provider or two healthcare providers if the parent or family member or caregiver isn't there. Mm-hmm. And the theory or the thought behind that is that that second person can provide developmentally supportive care while the other person is actually doing their assessment and looking at that piece. So one person might be tucking in the limbs midline and placing a cloth over the baby's eyes with the bright light to not make mm-hmm. them grimace with the bright light and hurt their eyes. So looking at those factors, that's a little bit different, I think, mm-hmm. than adult care would be. We consolidate our care as much as we can in our assessments as well. So we try to not constantly be in the isolate or constantly in the crib. Period. Babies need periods of rest. It, mm-hmm. It's really important for their growth and development. And so we try to, unless it's urgent or emergent, we try and kind of consolidate our care to certain time periods if we can. And then while we're doing an assessment, we look at the neonates cues. So we do a lot of kind of neonatal led assessment. So if the baby is or neonate isn't tolerating the care, which is shown through things like their facial expression, sometimes changes in vital signs, sometimes breath holding or apnea, then we pause and we provide developmentally supportive care. We let that baby take a rest. And then we may or may not continue that assessment. And it obviously depends on the urgency and mm-hmm. of the care or assessment as well. But we do our best to have those overarching pieces to our care. And we do also try and time our assessments when family or caregivers are present and participate. And mm-hmm. if we can, we do assessments skin to skin as much as we can as well. Again, depending on what the situation and what we're assessing. And then I would say the overall assessment itself, the first assessment the baby has is probably the Apgar scores mm-hmm. right after birth. So that's appearance, pulse, grimace, activity or tone, and respiratory. And then they're scored based on that 1 in 5 minutes and sometimes beyond, depending on what the 5 minute score is. So that's really the first baby's assessment. Mm-hmm. And that is actually somewhat subjective, I find, but it does give us a little bit of a picture of how they initially started transitioning when they're born. Mm-hmm. And then there's the typical things like all babies need weights, of course. All of our medications are weight-based and we do independent double checks. And there is mm-hmm. a lot of math in NICU, basic mm-hmm. arithmetic, but math nonetheless. And then we do typical vital signs, temp, respiratory, heart rate, oxygen monitoring if they need it. And we do palpate pulses, brachial and femoral. We compare both sides. We look at general appearance. Like I said, that hands-off assessment, looking mm-hmm. at tone, activity, postures, their state or behavior. Are they alert? Are they crying? Are they quiet? Do they look like they're in discomfort, like they're grimacing at rest? Looking at their skin, are they jaundiced? What's the color? Do they have rashes, bruising? Are they mottled, pale, or cyanotic? Listening to heart sounds. So even though we listen to the heart rate, but we also listen to if there's a murmur and what mm-hmm. the rhythm is. Capillary refill. We look at their head and neck, checking their fontanelles, anterior and posterior. We check their sutures. Are they overlapping? Are they separated? We look for like caputs or cephalohematomas from the delivery. Check their clavicles, especially if it's just shoulder dystocia. They can sometimes have a fractured clavicle. So we always like just palpate their clavicles. Their face, we look at like symmetry in their face. Does it look like there's normal development? Does it look like there's like patency where there should be? Mm-hmm. And any skin tags. We check their spine. We look for any sacral dimple. Sometimes that requires ultrasound and they'll be looking mm-hmm. for like any neural tube defects mm-hmm. in that situation. So ruling that out. Mouth, we look at the palate, making sure there's no cleft palate there and the tongue. And then, of course, the lungs, which I said respiratory morbidities mm-hmm. are one of the main reasons for NICU admission. So we look at, like, we auscultate lung sounds or lung fields. Look at, are they grunting? Are mm-hmm. they making retractions? Are they struggling to breathe at all? Going down to their abdomen, is it soft, round, distended? Are there bowel loops, we call it sometimes? And that's where, like, you can see the outline of the bowels through the abdomen. And that can be a sign of an illness called necrotizing enterocolitis, which can mm-hmm. happen to premature babies. Is there any discoloration, masses, hernias? And then, of course, going down to the genitals, making sure there's normal development there and things are patent. making sure they voided and stooled, looking at limbs, normal movements, activities. We do to check newborn reflexes as well. So do they have, like if you touch on their cheek, do they turn towards your finger? The moral reflex, if you gently place them down, do their hands move mm-hmm. and kind of vibrate out? So typical newborn reflexes is a part of a neurological assessment. And then we do measurements like head length or head circumference, sorry, and length. And then, of course, looking at the overall picture, like what are the diagnostics, what are the labs, other tests like we do with all of our patient mm-hmm. assessments to help us give us an overall picture. There's tons of other nuances. Mm-hmm. And depending on the baby's condition, there would be more in-depth assessment. But I think that's probably enough for this podcast.
Yeah, amazing. Thanks for that overview, Sheena. I know it's a lot. And trying to, you know, get it down to the bare bones, that was really helpful for me to hear about. It kind of strikes me that there is a lot that we could learn, and by we, I mean me, in the adult world that we could take from the principles that you just talked about with your neonates about, you know, really making it person-centered, the care, and, you know, trying to be really responsive to what our patient needs, no matter what age they're at. So I really appreciate you bringing that up. And I know something that this is maybe the only thing I know about kiddos, that we talk a lot about family-centered care. I'm assuming that's true for you in the NICU. And could you maybe speak about that a little bit?
Yeah, we really put families first within mm-hmm. the NICU. Like we understand them as almost like if the baby was at the core of the circle, the next layer is the family. And without the family support and family engagement and family leading the care of their baby, then they're not going to be successful when they're discharged within that family unit, or at least there's less of a chance of that. Mm-hmm. So, and it's not just attachment. Attachment is so important, of course, and we really try and support that. But it's also, we want them during their NICU stay to feel that they're a core part of the team. Mm-hmm. So there's an overall program or platform called ViCare that has been brought into a lot of NICUs. And it's really pushing the family as a core member of the team, not a visitor. Mm-hmm. And that's really the philosophy that we're trying to instill in NICUs. Of course, we work with the families to see where they're at. We don't want to push them to take on roles within the team that make them uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. An example of that is parent-led rounds. So we're encouraging parents to engage in rounds more and even sometimes present certain parts of who their baby is. Mm-hmm. And then not just being an afterthought at the end of rounds yep. to say, hey, what do you think? You know? Yep. So I think we do a good job. I think there's definitely, that's a very big focus in neonatal mm-hmm. care is family-centered or ViCare. Could we do better? Yes, I feel like we could always do better for sure. The way that our healthcare systems are set up sometimes aren't as welcoming mm-hmm. as they could be, but mm-hmm. I think we're working towards that and it's really exciting to see.
Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. so important. And so I'm thinking about the work being done with neonates. You know, you're setting up this person for the rest of their life and yeah. the impact, the responsibility seems huge mm-hmm. and the potential impacts of the care you give or don't give or do well or do poorly can really impact this person for the rest of their life. And yeah, I just want to maybe express appreciation for the nurses doing this work and how important it is, really valuing the work that they're doing. So thanks for sharing that. So what about if I'm not a NICU nurse, but I'm in an area where I encounter neonates or may encounter neonates, do you have any advice on, is there specific equipment that I should be familiar in my care area mm-hmm. and I should go become comfortable with before a neonate rolls through the doors? Do you have mm-hmm. like a top three or something of things that we should know about?
Yeah, I can think of many things again, okay, but excellent. I'll try and narrow it down. One thing I would say is if you're not familiar with neonatal care and you need something to support you is our ACORN. I'm going to put a plug in for that.
Yeah, please.
Not our ACORN. I say our because we've been teaching it, but it actually is the CPS, the Canadian Pediatric Society, mm-hmm. and PSVC, our perinatal Perinatal Services BC, so I don't own it per se, but it's an amazing platform that has a primary survey specific to neonates, and it takes you through step by step and then has algorithms within each system to follow. So it might not direct you to the specific equipment, but I really think that's a great resource for people. And we are rolling it out and educating throughout the health authority, but grab that. There's an essential guide that sort of breaks down the large textbook and laminates that take you through the process. So grab those and go through those with your team, even review them beforehand if you have time before the baby comes in. I just think those are really, really great resources, especially for providers, for everyone, but especially for providers that don't work with babies all the time or neonates all the time. The equipment, you definitely will need a way to provide warmth. So that's really, thermal regulation is really important. So thinking about how you're going to provide that warmth, there's different ways you can do that through overhead warmers or an incubator. Some people even have just a heat lamp. But if that's the case, you need to keep a really close eye on the baby's temperature because that can also overheat them because it's not being monitored really closely. Other equipment, a way to provide oxygen. And if you have a blender, that would be great because we don't provide 100% oxygen to our babies. We titrate our oxygen to meet our oxygen saturation goals, which are 90 to 95%. Okay. And so if you have an ability to do that, then that's beneficial. Airway management would be important, especially because a lot of the issues or morbidities are related to respiratory. So that can be an ET tube, having some way to provide positive pressure ventilation if the baby's not breathing, so a safe way to do that, and a neonatal specific way, not like an adult ambubag. And an LMA that would be really valuable to have at hand. And then with that, an OG tube, some way to decompress the stomach from that all that air that's going in when you're supporting respirations. And then a syringe pump. All of our medications are provided by syringe pump. So that would be really important. And a way to provide vascular access, I would say. So whether that's through an umbilical catheter or through a PIV or an IO. So there's a few different ways that you can do that. But thinking about that and kind of preparing some of that equipment beforehand, I think would be helpful. A way to provide cardiorespiratory and oxygen monitoring, like a monitor, that would be important too.
Okay. And can you tell us more about, so the ACORN course, if someone wants to take that, how do they, do they ask their educator or how would they go about that?
Yeah, I would say start with your educator and then the educator can contact us in the network. So myself or Michaela Madropa, she's our perinatal network educator. She helps coordinate the courses as well. So either of us contact, reach out, express that your site is interested in having a course there. And then we can add it to our conversations with our ACORN instructors around which sites we're going to next, because there is actually a lot of requests already. And that's so great. We're super excited, but we do have only so much capacity because we all have other jobs too that we do. And so we will add it to our list and have a conversation with you around what your needs are and what you would like to get out of it.
Okay, amazing. That's great. And then what about courses? So if someone's listening to this and thinking, oh gosh, I always wanted to be a neonatal nurse, is there an in-house course we can direct them to, or BCIT certification? What do you suggest?
Well, there's both. Historically, as some of us might know, we have a lot of great in-house specialty programs now. Historically, BCIT had been the only program in British Columbia. Some people still choose to do that route and go through BCIT, and it's a great program. I've actually taught in that program before I came to IH. It is a really good program. But the neonatal specialty program called NEST in Interior Health is taught by three neonatal regional knowledge coordinators through the professional practice office. And they're brilliant. They're amazing. They have a lot of great education to offer. And the best thing about it is that it's tailored to IH, like being a neonatal nurse in IH, because some of the nuances of NICUs in the lower mainland don't apply to our NICUs. And so they have been able to take that information and really tailor it to working within interior health. Mm-hmm. So the program is also based on very current evidence-based education, and it actually just recently got CNA accreditation.
Wow.
So that's a huge, huge kudos.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah, so we're all very excited about that.
Yeah, I bet. And then do folks just look out for the postings then for specialty education? That's how they access those?
Yeah, I think the managers of the sites, if they're looking for staff, then they put out a NICU education kind of job posting. I actually don't know exactly what the title is. Mm-hmm. I apologize.
That's great.
And then you would apply, the manager would interview you, and then you would, if you are hired, then you put through that program.
Okay, really cool. And you've already pointed us to some really good resources with the ACORN, et cetera, and our in-house program and BCIT. Are there some other places that have some of your favorite resources? So I'm thinking of, is there a national association that does a conference every year, or do you have a website that you send people to? Where should we go if we wanted to learn some more?
So there is a national association called the Canadian Association of Neonatal Nurses, and they do hold a conference, and usually annually. I think it stopped over COVID, but I did go to the last one in Toronto, and it's great. It's a great conference to network and meet other experts across Canada, and sometimes they bring people up from the States as well as learn new research that's happening and mm-hmm. new evidence-based practice. It's really great. So that would be one website. You do need to become a member if you want to access their webinars. They have some really good webinars, but I'm pretty sure you have to be a member. They mm-hmm. also have a podcast through their website. Yeah. And I think it's called Neo Chats, if I'm correct. There's a few podcasts out there. But I think those are free. I don't think you need to be a member for the podcast. Don't quote me on that for sure. Another great resource that it's written for families, but nurses can go to as well to learn about neonatal care. And if they're supporting families, there's some great resources on there. It's the Canadian Premature Babies Foundation. Mm. So they have some great information for families and for healthcare providers. There is a sister association in the States called the National Association of Neonatal Nurses. Okay. They also have great resources. Of course, the Canadian Pediatric Society, we go to them a lot for their upcoming statements mm-hmm. and previous statements to guide our practice. One of the podcasts I really like is called Small Brains, Big Dreams, and it's through the Newborn Brain Society. It's an international website for multidisciplinary teams and for parents. Mm-hmm. And it encourages collaboration and education and innovation around neonatal neurology, which is kind of a sub-passion of mine.
Yeah.
And they have free webinars. So if someone's interested, especially in that kind of very niche area, mm-hmm. An area that I think there's a lot of unknowns, that's a really good resource. There's an incubator podcast. I have it through Spotify. I listen to sometimes. They review articles and they do interviews of neonatal experts.
Oh, that's great.
Mainly through the US, but they do sometimes have Canadian guests as mm-hmm. well. And then I would say the two journals I mostly refer to or read, not refer to, I wouldn't say that, I refer to lots of journals, but the ones I read the most are Advances in Neonatal Care and Neonatal Network. Those two are neonatal nursing-based journals.
Okay.
I like that they're neonatal, but also nurse-specific mm-hmm. and not medical-specific mm-hmm. all the time. And then there's a really good book that I'm reading right now, Trauma-Informed Care in the NICU by Mary Coughlin. Mm-hmm. She's a registered nurse in NNP. And it looks at the journey of the neonate and the family in the NICU and how NICU nurses and providers can mitigate trauma in the setting for both mm-hmm. the neonate and the family. It's not a new book, but I think it really looks at some good things we're doing in NICU as well as where we would like to go.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to family and neonatal care.
Mm-hmm.
And amazing. I think that's my list. Yeah.
That's a great list. That gives lots to chew on for people. So that's so helpful. Sheena, we're coming to the end of our time together, but I just want to check, is there anything that you wanted to discuss that you didn't get a chance to mention yet that you'd be unhappy if we didn't talk about before you left?
I think one thing I'd like to mention is this quote that our neonatologist, mm-hmm. my medical dyad in the network, often says as kind of her elevator speech. She says, More neonates will die in the first 28 days of life than any other time in a person's life, between 29 days to 28 years, with 80% of them occurring in the first 7 days and the majority being on day one. So I think that this just like, quote, not to kind of turn the conversation into something that's maybe a little bit more sad, but just the importance of the care that we're providing. Mm-hmm. And I think it just really emphasizes that even though this is a small population within the overall health authority, it really is a very, very, very important one. And as mm-hmm. you said, what we do now with these babies is going to influence them into adulthood. And so what the care we provide is huge. Neonatal nurses often joke that once you work in the NICU, you'll never want to work anywhere else. Oh. It's an amazing place to work. It's if you're interested in the higher intensity of a critical care environment, but also, mm-hmm. also the relational side of mm-hmm. working with families and babies, then it's, I really think it's a perfect marriage in that sense, if that's something that you are looking for. And that's what I love most about it, as well as the privilege to join families and their babies on that journey through the NICU stay. It's a really rewarding career path.
Well, Sheena, thank you so much for, first of all, for all the work that you do and the ways that you support our nurses to provide this really impactful care to our smallest, our littlest patients. Yeah. So thank you for that. And thanks for sharing your time today. I certainly learned a lot. So thanks for the, I don't think we can even call it, it's not a crash course. It's like a sample introduction, like when you go to a restaurant and they start you off with the bread basket. I think that's what we got today. So that's my favorite part of the meal. But thank you so much for sharing with us. And really hope that we'll have you on again to talk some more about our little neonates. And then just before we go, I'd like to thank the IH Professional Practice Office for supporting this project. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes, you can email us at professionalpractice@interiorhealth.ca. And we would just like to thank the marvelous Duane Walwin, who's our sound editor and does all the magic behind the scenes for us. So thanks, Duane. Thank you so much, Sheena. Really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's all for this episode. Thank you for joining us today. We know you're busy and your time is valuable. Thank you for spending some of it with us. Thank you for your commitment to your profession and to your patients and being a part of the journey of building a culture of excellence around nursing in our health region.